Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to show number 108 of Absolutely Intercultural, the podcast where we explore all aspects of intercultural communication. My name's Anne Fox, and this show is coming to you from Denmark. Today, we're going to start with a short test. You're going to need something to write with and a piece of paper. I'm going to say two words, and you just need to write down the first two or three words which come into your mind when you hear them. Are you ready? Right. The first one is Britain. Note down the first two or three words which you think of when I say the word Britain. Done that? The next one is Africa. Note down the first two or three ideas which come into your mind when I say Africa. Finished? Well, I'll tell you how you scored later on in the show. So what have we got for you today? Well, in the first piece, I'll be talking to Ekene Ajufo from Nigeria and Pollyanna Sanchez Martinez about a discussion forum event they organised on behalf of the African Student Union at their university in Florida to discuss the theme of us versus them. But surely, in this era of the internet, we're all reasonably aware of what it's like in Africa.
I mean, even yesterday I had a conversation with a friend and they didn't even know that their cities in Africa were skyscrapers, you know.
We'll also be hearing more from Cornelius Hulsman in Egypt about why good information literally can save lives.
But the international attention was on this conflict as a religious conflict. Well, it became one, but it wasn't. It didn't start like that, and you have to know that. So we took students.
And as well as good information, we'll be hearing about the power of music to bring people together in a very concrete way when we talk to Malijn Twelfhoven, who specializes in bringing music to conflict-ridden areas of the world.
Well, since I found out how music can break through boundaries in society, mm-hmm. I love to bring it to places where society suffers from it, these boundaries. Yeah. And the boundaries can be inside a society or, of course, between cultures or between neighbours.
And I'll be reminding you that it is still possible to vote for us in the European Podcast Award, both under Germany and under Denmark, and that you don't have to be in Europe to vote for us, and that the voting is open until July. So in our first segment, we'll be going absolutely African to hear about a discussion forum entitled Us versus Them, which was organised by the African Students' Union of the University of Florida as its contribution to Black History Month. I watched a video of the highlights of that discussion and then talked to two of the organisers, Pollyanna Sanchez Martinez and Ekene Ajufo, to find out more about why they staged the discussion and what came out of it.
Yeah, well, basically it was started at UF in 1972, just trying to get African students that go to UF to kind of form some sort of family, atmosphere, considering many of them came straight from Africa to UF. And since then, we've been putting on different programs to try and get UF more aware of the African community in Gainesville and on its campus.
So can you tell me a little bit about this discussion event which you put on and what prompted you to do that?
Okay. Basically, we were supposed to submit an event for Black History Month, and basically in our meetings, we've always had discussions that Black History Month doesn't seem to encompass Africans as well. And so we felt that having like a forum like this, an us versus them, would kind of bring out our feelings and try and figure out why we're not as represented as much, and just kind of, you know, talk about the stereotypes and educate people at the same time about Africans, African Americans, and the entire diaspora.
But oftentimes it seems as if you know, it is just that one community that seems to stick together, and people do have their opinions about, you know, you just because of your ethnicity. And we were trying to, you know, just break those stereotypes and also educate people about the culture, and also address a lot of issues that people think that you know, are within the culture on and within other cultures and how people perceive each other. That's why the whole theme of us versus them, it is whether or not there really it is really us or them, you know, versus them, or is it, you know, something that's seen individually? Like, because some people are going to say, you know, definitely that I think everyone's out to get me. I think, you know, it's just I can only depend on the people who are from my background, from my culture. And then other people are just like, no, I've never seen anything like that in my life, you know. So we kind of wanted to also get those two perspectives and see whether or not it really is, you know, an us versus them situation on our campus or in society.
So in that situation, who would be us and who would be them?
Us was kind of like, it's kind of subjective because we had a lot of people from different backgrounds who could relate, but how we intended it was us was like the African culture, the African, you know, student population. And them was basically, I think a lot of people kind of perceived it as just like American, African Americans. But it kind of didn't really turn out that way. it was kind of like every other culture and then African, but the conversation didn't lean at that way at all.
There was that whole discussion about the different levels within the African community.
No, like ethnocentrism, kind of like the belief that my culture is better. Everyone's going to feel that way, though.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to be like, no, my culture doesn't do this. My culture doesn't do that. I just feel like a lot of people have that misconception when they hear African, they think tribal, they think traditional. They don't know about modern Africa. They don't see the stores, you know, like they don't see the cities. They just like Africa has models. Africa has America, you know, Africa's top model. I met a model, you know?
Mm.
And so, I mean, it's just like a lot of people have that conception that Africa is, you know, Shaka Zulu, you know, with the tribal skirt and the women don't have on clothes, like the National Geographic type of thing. And so when it comes down to that, it's like, you know, they have that perception that Africa isn't revolutionized. And so a lot of times people think, okay, because of that, you know, they're ignorant, they're this, they're that. And once again, that's stereotyping. Mm-hmm. So when you look at it, like, of course, you know, people want to kind of dismiss themselves as coming from the motherland because, you know, that's what they see. That's what TV portrays, you know,
mm-hmm.
Like you don't necessarily see, oh yeah, we have African rappers. We have, you know, presidents who are doing things like you just hear about, Mugabe and other presidents who are tyrants. You just like you see people with AIDS. That's what I guess media wants to portray because that's what people want to see. But that's not really what it is. So people have that misconception about what modern Africa is, and because of that, they think, okay, yeah, because I'm African American, I am definitely better. And that's not the case at all. Just a little education would improve that, and that's what we were trying to do with this forum.
But I mean, it goes both ways though, because I know definitely a lot of Africans feel as if their culture is superior to African Americans, because you know when they come here, they feel as if they take up the opportunity given to them, whereas they feel as African Americans don't do it. So you see a lot of Africans striving to become the top of their field, like doctors and lawyers and this and that, whereas African American children usually seem to only strive to be top athletes. And so, I mean, a lot of Africans will feel as if they're, you know, better than the African-Americans here. And it's just another type of just stereotyping. Instead of looking into, you know, more of the specifics and becoming educated, they just kind of take that stance.
Mm. So what do you think you've achieved by having this discussion?
Definitely educating people, opening their eyes, especially just seeing that Africans aren't as backwards as, you know, a lot of people perceive. I mean, even yesterday I had a conversation with a friend, and they didn't even know that their cities in Africa were skyscrapers, you know. I was just trying to tell them that my mom she was born in Nigeria, born and raised there, and never, ever saw a lion. It was not her, like, pet animal. She had to go to the actual zoo to see a lion in Africa, so.
But it kind of put things into perspective, because I was like, because I used to get offended when people would be like, oh, so how'd your parents get here on a raft? Or like, it's like, no, we have airplanes. You know what I mean? Like,
do people really say that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Yes, they do. They speak their mind.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe more news needs to come out of Africa, or not news, but just information. Maybe that's what's needed.
I feel that, you know, there is a lot, definitely good information, even music-wise, you know, a lot of the artists win, like, Artists of the Year or International Artists of the Year, but we don't really hear about that, especially on TV. You know, they definitely portray the bad information rather than what's good most of the time, and that's just worldwide they do that. Like, we'd rather hear about, you know, the terror and the scary things that are going on rather than what people are actually doing good to better themselves or their country.
Mm. So can you personally do anything to counter that?
Yeah, that's what we try to do. Every time I have a conversation with people, I definitely tell them, like, Africa is nothing like what you see on National Geographic. And actually, a lot of Africans, and my experience, are very offended about over National Geographic, because they're always showing the same tribal people that they've never seen in their lives. I try and definitely always have that conversation with people whenever, wherever I go.
So what did you note down during my little test at the beginning of the show? If your notes include words such as tribal, tyrants, AIDS, or lions, then you will understand that you've failed. If you'd like to tell us how you did on the test, or talk to us about anything else to do with the podcast, then please do go to our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com and add a comment. Let's now join someone who featured in show 106 and who I met at the Anna Lynn Foundation Forum in Barcelona in March. Cornelis Hulsman is trying to improve the quality of information coming out of one specific African country, Egypt. Let's go absolutely informative.
I am Cornelis Hulsman. I was born in the Netherlands, living in Egypt, working in Egypt on dialogue between Muslims and Christians, and came first to the country in 1976. I've been devoting all my life on this subject.
So what does your institute do to try and help?
We are, first of all, making a systematic overview from Arab media on all reporting in Egypt on Muslim, Christian and Arab-West relations. We bring this together and make it accessible through a database. We are providing media critique, and we are assisting people as much as possible to help to discover the context. If you want to address conflict issues, you have to know the full picture and not only part of the picture. Mm-hmm. And that's what we help people with.
I liked the project that you described, whereby foreign volunteers and Egyptians work together on analyzing stories. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yes, we started as an electronic magazine that became an electronic database. The whole thing is a gradual development that wasn't planned in advance. It came naturally. In 2006, we had the German embassy recommending our work for German students, for German interns in Egypt, and we got the first German students. Later, the Danes followed, people from other students from other countries followed. The Danes were providing some finance for scholarships. We got Egyptians involved, and then you get Egyptian and non-Egyptian students working together on analyzing the material. So you have a database. You have then students go systematically through this on a particular subject. They use it for papers, but we also help them to meet with key people, because it is not only media. You have to go and meet key people on particular subjects that you are studying. You have to go on location. So we take people to location. I've taken students to different conflict situations, and when you come in, people welcome you. So it's not a matter of being dangerous, as some people would think. Mm. It's also not free. It is people try to convert you to their position. But, well, if you tell students in advance that will happen to you, well, so what? You are prepared for that, and you hear the stories from different angles, and then you can make up your mind. So it's not really a problem. But in conflict situations, of course, people try to do this. People try to convince you of their right as opposed to someone else's right.
And can you give an example of something that a student pair has unearthed like that?
Well, one of the most important reports that has come out in the past year is the report on the conflict of the monastery of Abu Fena, some 300 kilometers south of Cairo, where a monastery expanded in the desert, so new land that wasn't used previously, but the monastery was not that far out in the desert. Arabs, local Arabs, were also expanding from their village into the desert, and they met each other. And if you then do not have proper government land registration, which you don't have in those new lands, you have it in the old lands, but not in the new lands, you get conflicts over where to draw the borders. And there were fights about it. And with the fights, Christians were seeking support from fellow Christians by calling it Muslims attacking us. And Muslims were doing similar things by trying to get people from their side support them. So it became, from a land conflict, a religious conflict, in which one Muslim young man was killed in a clash, and three monks were kidnapped, and that drew international attention. But the international attention was on this conflict as a religious conflict. Well, it became one, but it wasn't. It didn't start like that, and you have to know that. So we took students into the area, meeting with the monks, meeting with Muslims in the area. We were received by all, great meetings, doing lots of reporting and just full reports. You have an interview and I ask them to make a full transcript, and you have another interview and you do a full transcript, and then you start putting them together and say, well, now we have to analyze this. And then you see how complicated this really is, and that this is not an easy black and white story, but there are many facets that play a role. And the students wrote a beautiful report about it of over 100 pages, in which non-Egyptians and Egyptians together were involved in doing that project.
You'll find links to Hulsman's various websites on our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com. And now I'd like you to meet another person who was at the Anna Lynn Foundation Forum in Barcelona in March. He also tackles conflicts, but in a very different way. We featured various ways in which music can bridge cultural barriers before, and in a way this is what Malijn Twaalfhoven does, but perhaps in a much more proactive way. Let's go absolutely musical.
I'm Marlijn Twaalfhoven. I come from Amsterdam, the Netherlands. I'm a composer. And with my music I travel very often to difficult places where there is conflicts or tensions in society.
And you choose to do that deliberately?
Well, since I found out how music can break through boundaries in society, I love to bring it to places where society suffers from it, these boundaries. Yeah. And the boundaries can be inside a society, or of course between cultures or between neighbors.
So can you give me some examples of some projects?
Well, I saw, for example, when I was in Cyprus, how much people really are so obsessed with the conflict in the past, and they see, of course, all the negative things surrounding it. So I tried to create something very unexpected, a big music performances on rooftops at both sides of the buffer zone. And that made people again perceive the present, you know, and just to listen and to look around. Because actually they can't look around anymore without seeing the past. Yeah. And I wanted them to see the present for a moment.
So how did that work? Was that simultaneous on both sides?
Exactly. We had clocks that were synchronized, and all musicians in their scores and in their schedules, exactly the timings of their the notes that they had to play were written down. So it was a whole synchronized performance with echoes across the divide.
Wow, that's amazing. So you had to choose a place where there were buildings very close to each other on both sides.
Yes. Yeah. And what was also a good aspect, because artistically it was very satisfying, because it was in some way a dialogue between art and the society, or art and the material of this town. But also the media reported in a very unconventional way. They had suddenly a story that is not bad news or politics or economy. They had a story about yeah, something that raises many questions. Mm. And we, the BBC covered it, the CNN, and many other channels. So that was really nice.
So did people know that it was happening in advance?
Of course, we tried to do some publicity, but finally the majority of the people just happened to be there. Mm. Because it was not... it was so accessible. It was all in the center of the town. Mm. So most of the people, for them, it was very unexpected.
So presumably you were there and you could see the reaction on people's faces?
Well, yes, I was there. Of course, I was only at one side, unfortunately. Mm. But I saw that people took time, like 1 hour, to listen and to be there. And especially when my music went wrong, when some musicians did not play where they should have, some silence appeared and you hear the sounds of the city, and everyone was listening very carefully to their own city, and normally that never happens.
Yeah. That sounds wonderful. And do you have any other examples of projects that you've done?
Yeah, several.
Yeah.
I created a festival in a gypsy ghetto in the eastern Slovakia, mm-hmm. where nobody from the non-Roma community dares to go into the ghetto. But because of this festival, now once a year there is one day that people have a reason to go into the ghetto. So the goal was very simple, just seeing how to seduce non-Roma to visit the Roma ghetto and to get aware a little bit more of that very separated society.
So where did you get the idea of doing exactly that? Did somebody tell you about it, or did you experience it?
Of course, I read about situations in the newspaper, for example, and then I go there and I look for myself what is the characteristics of this situation and how art can influence any development around it. So the project, it has really to be designed on the spot and in close contact with the locals and inhabitants.
So do you have any ideas for future projects?
Yes, of course, many. But it's always a long process to realize it. Mm. I just came back from the Middle East, from Syria, from Amman, I work on several ideas. But they develop a lot as soon as you're there, and as soon as you talk with people, try things out, because it's easy to think about a nice symbol when you're in the Netherlands, but once you're there, you see that some symbols doesn't really have a very constructive meaning, you know? Mm-hmm. Just making a symbol about peace or understanding can actually make people very bitter when you don't deliver a real progress on the matter.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
You can find out more about Milijn's amazing musical projects at his website, which is just hislastname.net. And Milijn has also given a TED talk, and you can find the link to that both on his website and on our blog. In fact, you can find links to all the people and organisations mentioned in the show on our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com, including a link to the European Podcast Award, where you can vote for us both under Germany and under Denmark. And did I mention that the voting continues until July? The next show will be coming to you from Germany with Laurent Borgmann on May the 14th. So until then, stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.